Welcome to Context, a podcast about the history behind current events in the Middle East. I'm Becky Nyman. The history will be provided through audio recordings of my late father, Dr. David Nyman, an expert on the ancient history of the region. Through his rich body of knowledge that's been preserved in these recordings, I'm going to try to provide a different and deeper perspective on the issues facing the world today. This episode was inspired by a recent study that was conducted by Columbia University and published in the journal Nature Communications. The researchers found that all Ashkenazi Jews are descended from a 350-person bottleneck that occurred between 600 and 800 years ago. The idea seems incredible that the origins of such a large and successful segment of the Jewish people could be so recent. But the science corresponds perfectly with the history. In 1264, the Charter of Boleslav was signed. The Jews of Western Europe were invited to run the business of the Polish princes. The charter guaranteed certain rights and protections for the Jews and resulted in a long period of prosperity and growth in Eastern Europe. The following audio segment is an excerpt from a classroom lecture given by my father that I recorded in the early aughts. The course was titled The Church and the Jews, and this segment gives the history behind this most significant of agreements, the Charter of Boleslav.
Now, among the people there in Eastern Europe who had organized themselves and now established kingdoms was the Polish kingdom. What was it? It was a collection of warriors, barons, each one of whom had a large area of land under his control. The Polish barons had established an empire which stretched from the Baltic Sea in Lithuania in the north down to the Black Sea, which is in the southern part of Russia and Ukraine. And this great empire needed guidance and direction, and they needed people to conduct the business of the empire. And these barons got together. They were all Polish speaking. They were all Catholics. And they said, well, now we have an empire. And their empire stretched from the Baltic Sea, Lithuania in the north, to the Black Sea and Ukraine in the south. This was the empire they had conquered. They said, well, none of us is going to give up his power. But together they get together and they elect one of them to be the king. So the king of Poland was one of the barons elected to be the king as long as he lived and as long as he functioned well. When he died, they elected somebody else. So this was the arrangement there. And the same arrangement eventually occurred in the area which became Russia later on. So here you have this empire controlled by the Poles stretching over this wide area. And they have a large empire. And every one of them is a warrior. And every one of them knows how to control his country in terms of military control. But this whole empire needs economic organization. They have resources. They have to do trade with the rest of the world. They don't know how to do it. They can't. They need somebody to guide them. And so they say, well, who can we get to run this empire? The first thing they did was to invite the German merchants of the Hanseatic League, a league of cities along the North Sea, which were German cities and were carrying on business on a large scale. And so they went to the German cities of the Hanseatic League, Marburg and Bremen and Hamburg and all of these cities on the North Sea, and they invited German merchants to come and organize the Polish kingdom, and they came. And in order to come, they demanded certain guarantees and certain exemptions. You know, if you want us to come and organize your economy, you have to give us something. And so a charter was drawn up known as the Marburg Charter, drawn up in the city of Marburg in Germany. This gave the Germans certain rights and freedoms, and of course, the power to run the economy of this large empire. And they did. They came in, they began to organize it. After a while, the barons looked at each other and they said, do you know what's the problem? They're going to take over the country, and they're going to run the country and take it away from us. We can't let that. So what do we do? Well, let's just kick them out and tell them to go home. So they said, sorry, contract is over. Back. What do we do now? I'll tell you what we can do. You know, the Jews of the Rhineland, they're just as smart as the Germans. But they won't take the country over because they're Jews. So they sent a delegation to the Rhineland, and they began to speak to the Jews. And the Jews said to them, "Why should we come to Poland? We are living here in Catholic countries and we're suffering, and you know how badly we're suffering, and you just became Catholics. Why should we go from the frying pan into the fire? I mean, why should we go there?" Well, the Poles said, "Look, tell us what you want. We will protect you. We'll protect you against the church. We'll protect you against many things." And the Jews began to dictate the terms of a treaty known as the Charter of Boleslav. The Charter of Boleslav. Boleslav at that time was elected king of Poland. The Charter of Boleslav of 1242. Two of the most interesting features of the Charter of Boleslav are the following. The first is that the Jews would be protected against the accusation of the libel blood, the blood libel. Now, what is the blood libel? You know, you should all know about it because there are people today in the year 2002 who are accusing the Jews with the blood libel. The libel says that Jews kill Christians to use their blood to celebrate the Passover, to use their blood to bake it into the matzahs and to mix it with the wine. This is the blood libel. Now you think how outrageous it is, how unbelievable it is. And yet it is something that has been propagated over the centuries. The blood libel is recorded as having been an accusation against the Jews of England back in the 13th century, the 14th century. It appeared in France time and time again. Jews were accused of killing a Christian in order to use his blood in order to celebrate the Passover. And there are so many interesting features of it. Some of you can probably imagine the psychological implications of that kind of accusation. In fact, now there are Arab Muslims who are using the blood libel, even though somehow it shouldn't derive from Islam, because there's something in Christianity which would make it, you could say, understandable why they should accuse the Jews of the blood libel, but there's nothing in Islam. But nevertheless, Muslims are now publishing that blood libel, that the Jews kill innocent people, Christians, in order to use their blood. And of course, any Jew who knows and any Christian who knows the Bible knows that the Bible says time and time again, at least seven times in the Bible it is said, you should not eat blood. You should not have any kind of blood in your food. And so there are strict laws against this. And you could say, well, why does the Bible say it seven times? The reason is that when we read pagan literature, Greek literature, and literature of the Babylonians, we'll see that among the pagans, the drinking of blood was a religious ritual and something that they did. And many people did it. There's a long, big story in the history of Herodotus, who writes about the wars of the 5th century BC, in which he describes this ritual of drinking the blood, especially the blood of your enemies. So, since this was something that was practiced on a wide scale, and the Bible from the very beginning is anti-pagan, constantly anti-pagan, God says seven times, do not eat blood, never eat blood, and so on. So the Jews don't do it, they avoid it, but nevertheless, this is the blood libel. So the question is, what if a Jew is accused of the blood libel? And by the way, when did this arise? It arose from time to time. If you found a person murdered, and there is no evidence as to who the murderer was, well, you can always pick on the Jews and accuse them, especially if it happened sometime around Easter, which is near Passover. The other thing is, if a child was murdered, you know, here in California in the 21st century, children are being murdered. If a child was murdered and the body was found and there's no murderer and no evidence, and certainly before the 20th century, it was very difficult to follow evidence if you didn't know exactly where and who and so on, if you didn't find a stream of blood or something along the ground. So a murdered person was a mystery. And if it happened at a certain time in a certain community under certain circumstances, the Jews were accused of being the murderers, and it was the blood libel. Now, what happened if a Jew was accused of the blood libel? The Jews demanded that they be defended and protected against this. And so in the Charter of Boleslav, the Polish king wrote, the barons agreed, if a Jew is accused of the blood libel, specifically that particular crime, he cannot be convicted unless three Jews testify against him. And the Jews thought that would be fair. I mean, they could find Christians to testify against them, but if they could find, they had three Jews to say, yes, we saw him do this, and so on, only then could he be convicted. And of course, it was practically impossible to convict the Jew. Jews didn't do these things. Nevertheless, the blood libel persisted. And I want to point out, sometime around, it was in the 18th century, that there was a blood libel accusation in Poland. And of course, this is late. Now, right now I'm talking about the 14th century, but in the 18th century there was an accusation of a blood libel, and the Pope sent a cardinal. His name was Lorenzo Ganganelli. And he said, look, go to Poland, examine this, and bring back a report and tell me what happened. Well, Cardinal Ganganelli wrote a report. He wrote a whole book on it. He said, it's an outright lie. It never happened. The Jews don't do it. This particular case showed that there was absolutely no evidence to say that. And not only that, he recommended that the Pope should condemn the blood libel because it is something that is based on total falsehood. And by the way, the popes did condemn the blood libel. Doesn't mean that it doesn't happen again and again. Well, that was one of the provisions of the Charter of Boleslav. Another important provision, very important, was Jews shall be governed by Jewish law, and the courts of the Jews shall be in the synagogues, and the rabbis of the Jewish community shall render decisions in the Jewish community according to their own legal system, which was the Talmud. But then there's another interesting feature. If you have law, you have to have a system of enforcement. I mean, suppose a judge makes a decision and there's no one to enforce it. That doesn't mean anything. If you go to trial and the judge says, okay, you didn't do the job you were supposed to do, you owe him $300, you have to pay him $300, and then you get the judgment, the man has to pay you because the judgment was issued. Suppose he doesn't want to pay you, well, then you can get law enforcement. There's a marshal, there's some kind of an authority, either a sheriff or some kind of authority who has the police power to say, you have to pay this judgment because the judge said you have to pay it. You have to have force in order for law to have meaning. Jews had legal systems and they had enforcers. In fact, it was a very interesting community, and we found the records of this community of Jews. It happened to be in a town by the name of Condia on the island of Crete in the Greek area. And in that place, there was a combined Jewish community of different origins. I mean, there were Jews who were Greek-speaking and Jews who were Spanish-speaking and Italian and Yiddish. A very mixed community. But all the rabbis got together and they formed a council. And the council made decisions on all matters in the Jewish community. But one of the rabbis was appointed constable, which means chief police enforcer. So when they issued a decree, there was a police force that would enforce that decree. Because if you have law, you have to have some kind of force. Now, in the Jewish communities in Poland, of course, this goes throughout history, but in the Charter of Boleslav, it's specifically stated, if the rabbis issue a judgment against somebody, and this person refuses to obey the judgment, then the rabbis can call on the governor to help enforce the decision. How? The governor can send in two tall, strong soldiers. And they come in and they say to this man, Jake, We understand that the rabbi made a decision against you and you have to obey. And if he doesn't want to, well, they just pick him up and they enforce the decision in every way, any way that they felt they could. And of course, there are many different ways to enforce decisions. But in any event, it shows that the Charter of Boleslav said, the rabbis shall judge the Jewish community and their judgment shall be enforced by the state, if necessary. It was a fascinating document because it granted the Jews protections which they wanted, and then, of course, they were supposed to run the economy of the country, and this was also part of the charter. And so the charter was signed by the king of Poland, Boleslav the Pious, and the Jews brought it back to the Rhineland, and the Jews began to migrate from the Rhineland into Eastern Europe, eventually creating the largest Jewish community in the world centered on Eastern Europe.
That was Dr. David Nyman on the Charter of Boleslav. The audio segment you just heard was taken from the audiobook, The Church and the Jews. Thank you for listening to Context, the podcast. You can follow the Context blog on the Times of Israel website. And please visit drdavidnyman.com for more audio, video, and other fascinating information.